weak, and helpless. Carry yourself with pride and military bearing, because many criminals can spot a soft target with one glance. Stay alert and aware of your surroundings. This is just one more way to keep your family safe. For more useful tips on home and personal defense, visit HomeDefenseShow.com.
American investors lost $3.7 trillion of net worth in the fourth quarter of 2018. When your portfolio's value decreases right before or early in your retirement, it can have a crippling effect. It's called sequence of returns risk, and it's a risk you simply cannot afford. We're Sound Income Strategies, and we're on a mission to help hardworking Americans transform their hard-earned savings into steady, predictable retirement income. Call now for free, no-obligation information to help you get started on your way to steady, predictable retirement income. Call 866-913-1234. 866-913-1234. Investment advisory services offered through Sound Income Strategies, LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisory firm. Let's transform that risk into income. Call 866-913-1234. 866-913-1234. Sound Income Strategies, powered by the Retirement Income Store.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HuntertonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business. Advancing Hunterdon is an ever-sharp focus on the growth and prosperity of Hunterdon County's businesses. Advancing Hunterdon engages businesses within and throughout the county that are responsive to a call to action as the next chapter in business success. If your business and organization wants to get engaged, contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. Advancing Hunterdon, a roadmap for economic growth for the business community of Hunterdon.
I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Thanks for joining us today on Frontlines of Freedom. It's a pleasure to introduce the noted author and historian Nathaniel Philbrick. He's written about our Revolutionary War. His latest book, In the Hurricane's Eye, is clearly on that topic, and it showed an aspect of the war that I knew existed but didn't realize I didn't understand. I guess you're really a naval guy, Nathaniel, so should I say welcome aboard?
Yeah, that sounds appropriate for a guy who lives on Nantucket Island, yeah.
Okay, that works. Give us a little bit of your background into your history. How did you become interested in and involved in history in general, early history and naval history?
Yeah, well, you know, I grew up in that maritime center of the universe, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. But when I was a kid, summering at my grandparents' place on Cape Cod, I learned how to sail. And for me, that was just transformative. I loved the sense of independence. I just, you know, loved being out on the water, the interaction with nature and all that. And I became a competitive small boat racer in college. And then when my wife and I turned 30, we had two little kids. My wife was a lawyer, and she had been working in Boston, but the commute to the house we owned outside Boston was driving both of us crazy. She got a job on Nantucket, and I was a huge fan of Moby Dick's at that point. I've always regarded that novel as my personal Bible. And we, of course, were moving to what had been in the 19th century the whaling capital of the world,
yeah.
Nantucket. And so I became interested in the history of what was now my adopted home and would write my first work of history, A Way Offshore, A History of Nantucket. And that introduced me to the story of the Essex disaster, the whale ship that was rammed by a whale in 1820 and eventually inspired the climax of Moby Dick, which I wrote about in the heart of the sea. And so that sort of set me on the path I've been on ever since. Each book seems to evolve organically from the one before it. And I've always had kind of a maritime interest coming from the perspective I do. I think, you know, America's been defined by a sense of wilderness, and we think of that as the West. But before there was the West, there was the sea. That was really the defining wilderness of this country. And I think it's an underappreciated and an important part of our history.
I've never thought about putting it the way you just did, but I couldn't agree more with you. And also, when I learned to sail, I got totally hooked on it, but I wasn't able to continue it. So you actually lived out what I sort of started wanting to do. So that's cool. Okay, let's talk about In the Eye of the Hurricane. That really, as I mentioned before, touches what were, at least to me, and I'm a bit of a historian in that area, some not realized parts of how we won, winning the Revolutionary War is the right word, but how we made the movement that led to a successful end to the war.
Well, you know, even for me, a maritime guy, I didn't fully appreciate the importance of the sea to the ultimate course of the American Revolution. You know, I grew up thinking of it as kind of linear, each battle a stepping stone to the next battle that ultimately led to our victory at Yorktown. But in writing the three books about the Revolution, Bunker Hill and Valiant Ambition Proceeding in the Hurricane's Eye, I began to appreciate that it wasn't that way at all. By 1780, when Benedict Arnold unsuccessfully attempts to surrender West Point to the British, the war has devolved into a stalemate. The British under Sir Henry Clinton are dug into New York, you know, more than 10,000 soldiers there. Washington is based on the Hudson, basically just staring at Clinton. Washington complains that the war drags on like a cart without wheels. You know, there's fighting happening, but most of that's to the south, and it's not good. Horatio Gates, the hero of Saratoga, loses the Battle of Camden to Lord Cornwallis. And, you know, it's just kind of we're stuck in a rut. And what Washington realized was that the only way he could win the victory that might end this thing in a favorable way for America was with the help of the French Navy. The French had joined the war in the spring of 1778. And up until that point, Britain, which was the most powerful naval force in the world, had control of the Atlantic seaboard, which meant that they could not only take any harbor or city on the water that they chose to, but they could transport their troops up and down the seaboard with relatively lightning speed, and there's just nothing Washington could do to contain them. But if the French Navy should bring over a naval force that was roughly equivalent and establish naval superiority along a section of the American coastline, that would give Washington the opportunity to win the victory on land that might end this thing. And so Washington saw this with a clarity that I think no one, even the naval people in France, completely understood as clearly as he did. And so that became his obsession throughout the alliance, was to get the French Navy up the Atlantic coast to help him out. Unfortunately, the French had their own priorities, and a lot of that involved the Caribbean. So it was a very difficult alliance from Washington's perspective.
But he sure pulled it off, didn't he?
He pulled it off. And, you know, that's another side. You know, he understood the sea, but he also was really adept at working the alliance. You know, I think we have a tendency in retrospect to think of the partnership between America and France as this, you know, benign, ideal melding of two great noble causes. But the fact of the matter, the French were only in it to take it to the British. They had been humiliated during the It was a 7 Years' War, also known as the French and India War in America. They had lost Canada. Their ally, Spain, had lost Florida, Alabama, New Orleans to the British. And they were angry, and they wanted to take Great Britain down a peg and restore the power that France and Spain had enjoyed prior to the 7 Years' War. And so as soon as they entered the war, it turned a colonial rebellion into a world war. And Americans, I think, in their self-serving way, tend to think of the 13 colonies as a jewel in the empire's crown, when actually the real money was to be made in the Caribbean, in the sugar plantations. And so as soon as France and Spain enter the war, their navies head south into the Caribbean, and they duke it out. France gets Tobago, the British get St. Lucia. They're battling it out back and forth and leaving Washington all by himself. He's got a small French force in Newport, a small naval force with 5,000 soldiers under General Rochambeau, but the British Navy has a blockade, and they're bottled up there and unable to go anywhere. So once again, there's Washington engineering all this, and ultimately it would result in the Battle of the Chesapeake that would make possible the great victory at Yorktown.
And what an amazing story that is, and what an amazingly clear way that's presented in this book. I'm just in awe of the book. Folks, if you have not read In the Hurricane's Eye, you want to do it. Nathaniel, people can buy that almost everywhere, I'm sure. Amazon, all the bookstores, I'm sure it's out everywhere, isn't it?
It is. Penguin has just reissued the two previous books about the Revolution I've written, Bunker Hill and Valiant Ambition, and they repackage them wonderfully. And so you can not only get In the Hurricane's Eye in paperback, but you can also get all three of them, the set. You know, it's been great to finally reach this point and see this war to its conclusion, because I've been working on it as long as the war itself. And it's been quite a deep dive and a fascinating one from my perspective.
And it's amazing how few Americans really understand our history. So three books that will help you understand as clearly as any three I could imagine our Revolutionary War and how and why we won it.
Yeah, and, you know, I think what people don't understand is, you know, without France, we would not have won our freedom.
Amen.
We needed that alliance.
Amen. Nathaniel, thank you. Thank you for your book. Thank you for taking time to join us today. Thank you. That book is a service to our nation because it makes clear about how our country began, truly. Thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you. Coming from you, it really means a lot to me.
Coming up next on Frontlines of Freedom, we'll talk with Bill Steffen about his veteran father on this, our Father's Day show. Then we'll open our weekly mailbag. This is Colonel Danny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, it's time for one-arm push-ups. Do 18 with each arm, then stand at ease, but do stay in the area. I'll be right back.
Now is the time, and wherever you are is the place. The Citadel makes it easier to earn your degree by offering master's degrees, graduate certificates, and undergraduate degree completion programs that are entirely online. These programs are convenient for working professionals and those serving in the U.S. military, continuing the Citadel's legacy of academic excellence. Classes are held to the same high standards that consistently name the Citadel the number one master's-granting public college in the South. The Citadel. Online, on your time. Visit citadel.edu/online.
For nearly 2,000 severely injured veterans, everyday life has become filled with barriers. So we build specially adapted homes at Homes for Our Troops. And thanks to our donors and supporters, this life-changing gift of freedom is provided mortgage-free to these veterans. But we need you to join us, too, in completing this important mission. Please visit HFOTUSA.org and help build homes and rebuild lives.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
As voters in New Hampshire head to the polls in New Hampshire on this cold and snowy day, it seems to be a two-horse race between Mayor Pete and Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders. As far as what we can expect to learn from the New Hampshire primary, Neil Levesque is the executive director of the New Hampshire Institute of Politics. He tells Fox News,
"It's always easy to go back in history and sort of compare presidential elections, but here's what we do know about the past, is that Bernie Sanders got 60% of the vote here 4 years ago, and so if he can sort of get those same people and create that momentum, and does he have a revolution? That's the big question that we're going to see tonight."
And Democrats are slamming President Trump's annual budget proposal. Talking with reporters at the Capitol, Senate Democratic leader Chuck Schumer calls it a blueprint for destroying America. Without providing any specifics, Schumer also says it will hurt American workers. This is USA Radio News.
Dish TV is better than cable TV. Why? Because you can save 45% on packages compared to your high-priced cable bill. Wow. Take those giant scissors out and cut the cable and save with Dish TV. Plus, you get a free DVR upgrade to record your favorite shows and free installation. And with Dish Anywhere, you can watch TV for free on your mobile device. Act fast. You can save hundreds of dollars. Does your cable company do that for you? I don't think so. Get all the best TV programming at your fingertips at a fraction of the price of cable TV. So say adios, arrivederci, goodbye to the high cable bill, and save up to 45% on Dish TV packages today. These are limited time offers and can change at any time. Call fast. 800-610-5739. 800-610-5739. 800-610-5739. That's 800-610-5739.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Hello, my name is Robert Burns. My website is BobBurnsSpeaks.com. Please tune in to Living Consciously, where myself and my co-host will entertain you, inform you, and educate you in certain modalities. Living consciously is something that we really must learn to do, because that way you'll know what's going on around you. This show can be heard at 2 p.m. every Friday on HuntertonChamberRadio.com. Thank you.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HuntertonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. This is the final formation for this week on Front Lines of Freedom. Okay, team, it's mailbag time. I welcome comments from you, our listeners. Do send your thoughts to me at danny@frontlinesoffreedom.com or do it on Facebook. Hey, Skip, what's the first one?
Mary, the mother of a Marine, really appreciated the interview with the lady who took Holocaust survivors to Poland. It made great sense to her that they also took young Israeli soldiers.
Agree, Mary. That was a great event, a great idea.
And Tim, an Army vet, liked the comparison of police and the military. He'd never thought of the similarities before.
Tim, we sheepdogs do have a lot in common, don't we? Okay, well now it's time to honor a wonderful vet who's no longer with us. Gottfried Armin Fritz Fradelli was born on June 26, 1917 in Wisconsin at a home that was located above the family's cheese factory. At 18, Fritz hitchhiked and rode the rails to Colorado, Wyoming, and California. He worked at two different dairies and cheese manufacturing companies. Fritz enlisted in the Army in 1939, was assigned to the Horse Artillery. A sergeant at the end of his two-year hitch, Fritz shortly thereafter joined up for the Army Air Corps. An officer convinced him to apply for officer's candidate school. He was commissioned a second lieutenant in 1943. Fritz was assigned to the 363rd Field Artillery Battalion in the 96th Infantry Division as a forward observer. His unit deployed to the Pacific and was in the fifth wave in the invasion of Leyte. Then Fritz went into the second wave on Okinawa. There he was shot through the neck by a Japanese sniper. He lay on a stretcher on the beach for 3 days, stable but totally paralyzed from the neck down, before being placed on a hospital ship. Fritz was admitted to the Letterman Army Hospital in San Francisco. After 7 months, he was able to walk again. He was medically discharged in October 1945 with 100% disability. In 1946, he enrolled in the University of Wisconsin and earned a degree in dairy science. He married Helen Bradfield on September 17, 1949, then moved to Tampico, Mexico, where he started a dairy business. They had four sons and lived there till 1962, when the dairy business was federalized. They returned to the U.S. and restarted their lives in San Antonio, Texas. Three of his four sons went into the military with ROTC commissions. The fourth son became a medical doctor. Fritz lived a rich and rewarding life until his death on December 22, 2004.
Well, Colonel, he really gave a lot to his country, didn't he?
He did. Wow, I can't even imagine some of that. Well, it's military history time. Skip, lead out, bro.
On 17 June 1775, British General William Howe landed his troops on the Charlestown Peninsula overlooking Boston, Massachusetts, and led them against Breed's Hill, a fortified American position just below Bunker Hill. As the British advanced in columns, American General William Prescott reportedly told his men, "Don't one of you fire until you see the whites of their eyes." When the Redcoats were within 40 yards, the Americans let loose with a lethal barrage of musket fire, throwing the British into retreat. After reforming his lines, Howe attacked again, with much the same result. Prescott's men were now low on ammunition, though, and when Howe led his men up the hill for a third time, they reached the redoubts and engaged the Americans in hand-to-hand combat. The outnumbered Americans were forced to retreat. The Patriots' gunfire had cut down nearly 1,000 enemy troops, including 92 officers. Of the 370 Patriots who fell, most were struck while in retreat. The British had won the so-called Battle of Bunker Hill and Breed's Hill, and the Charlestown Peninsula fell firmly under British control. Despite losing their strategic positions, the battle was a morale builder for the Americans, convincing them that patriotic dedication could overcome superior British military might.
And it did. And on 20 June 1864, during the Civil War, General John Bell Hood's Confederate force attacked William Sherman's troops outside of Atlanta, but they were repulsed with heavy losses. This was Hood's first battle as the head of the Army of Tennessee. He had assumed command from Joseph Johnson just 2 days before, when Confederate President Jefferson Davis replaced Johnson after Sherman had backed Johnson into this key southern city. Davis selected the more offensive-minded Hood to defeat Sherman. Hood wasted little time. He planned to strike the Union Army as it crossed the Peachtree Creek. The waterway was deep, and the Confederates destroyed all the bridges on the retreat into Atlanta. Hood suspected that Yankees were most vulnerable when only part of their force was across the creek, so he planned a two-pronged attack to hold part of the Union Army at bay while the rest could be pinned against Peachtree Creek. It was a sound plan, but poorly executed. Scheduled for 1 p.m., the attack was delayed for 3 hours while Hood's troops shifted into position. The overall assault lacked a general coordination, so units charged the Union positions piecemeal. 20,000 rebels assaulted the same number of Yankees. The Confederates achieved some success, but couldn't drive the Union troops back. After 3 hours, Hood ordered a halt to the advance. He did try again later.
On 19 June 1944, in what would become known as the Marianas Turkey Shoot, U.S. carrier-based fighters decimated the Japanese fleet with only a minimum of losses in the Battle of the Philippine Sea. The security of the Marianas Islands in the Western Pacific were vital to Japan. Our 5th Fleet was on its way west as backup for the invasion of Saipan and the rest of the Marianas, but the Japanese admiral decided to challenge the American fleet, ordering 430 of his planes, launched from aircraft carriers, to attack. In what became the greatest carrier battle of the war, our Navy, having already picked up the Japanese craft on radar, proceeded to shoot down over 300 aircraft and sink 2 aircraft carriers, losing only 29 of their own planes. It was described in the aftermath as a turkey shoot. Admiral Zawa, believing his missing planes had landed on their Guam airbase, maintained his position in the Philippine Sea, allowing for a second attack of our fighter planes to shoot down an additional 65 Japanese planes and sink another carrier. In total, the Japanese lost 480 aircraft, three-quarters of its total, not to mention most of the crews.
And that's military history for today. Skip, it's time for the Armed America Report. Let's do it this week.
All of us here at Front Lines of Freedom believe strongly in your right to keep and bear arms for protection of yourself and your family. Listen, folks, evil exists. Someday evil will visit your door. Will you be ready? If you're not, now is the time to start looking into it and learning the skills necessary to protect the ones you love. What's the story this week, Colonel?
Soundly asleep in her bedroom in Kansas City, a 74-year-old woman awakened to the sound of a burglar breaking her door open. Startled, the woman grabbed her recently purchased handgun and met the intruder at the top of the stairs, where she took aim and fired a single fatal shot. EMS arrived on the scene to save the life of the homeowner, who suffered a heart attack after the incident.
Colonel, I love stories like this, primarily, you know, especially when you've got like a 74-year-old woman, right? I get a lot of elderly people in my class, and elderly to me is anyone who's older than I am. So
careful there, dude.
Well, you know what I mean, Colonel. But, you know, these little old ladies, these grandmas, great-grandmas, come out onto the range, and they'll be shooting, and a lot of them can only handle a .22 caliber pistol because of the recoil, and yep, they can't rack the slide, all of this stuff. And some other big, tough guys, right, will ridicule them. But the truth is, I did the research on this lady. She was shooting a .22 caliber pistol. But, you know, when you shoot them in the head, it doesn't matter how big the bullet is. It really doesn't.
And my wife shoots a .22 mag.
Yes, that's right.
That will do some serious damage.
Definitely. You know, and the bottom line is, you basically, you shoot the highest caliber that you can safely and accurately control. And if it's a 9mm, fine. If it's a .45, fine. But if it's a .22, that doesn't mean that you just can't go armed. It just means you have to be a better shot. And headshots, that's nothing to scoff at.
Yes, indeed. And I suspect the late burglar, if he were here, would agree with you.
Absolutely, Colonel.
Our movie of the month is Marcos Doesn't Live Here Anymore. Please go to the Front Lines of Freedom website, go to the blog and get the link. You can watch it for free. This is a very appropriate movie. You want to see it. And we'll review it at the end of the month. I'd really appreciate your input. The book giveaway this month is Rene Nichelle's Always My Hero. To get in on the drawing, send me an email to denny@frontlinesoffreedom.com and put Always My Hero in the subject line. Next week on Front Lines of Freedom, General Arnold Pinero will join us to discuss our nation's challenges. We'll also talk with Steve Wilson from HelpVet.net about helping vets. Pilot Randy Norton will discuss World War II aircraft, and he knows a lot about them. And I'll shoot the bull with combat veteran Tom Norton.
Thank you, friends, for joining us for Front Lines of Freedom today and every week on this great station. Please check us out on Facebook and add your comments. And if you missed any part of this show, Hey, all our shows are available on demand at frontlinesoffreedom.com. We especially thank our military listeners for serving our country with honor and dignity and for keeping us all safe. God bless you and your families as you serve.
I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Thank you, listeners all across America, for joining us in the foxholes on the front lines of freedom. Join me next week for military and veteran information that you won't get anywhere else on the front lines of freedom. Dismissed.
Fisher House is a huge part of the recovery for wounded, injured, and ill service members and veterans. They provide a comfortable, safe place for their families. It's not a hotel. These houses are located at military and VA medical centers all over the U.S. and around the world. They have a common kitchen, laundry facilities, a warm dining room, and an inviting living room, too. Help make a difference in the lives of military and veterans' families. Learn how you can help Fisher House today at fisherhouse.org.
Killing terrorist combatants ought not to be a crime. Yet Lieutenant Clint Lawrence is at Fort Leavenworth for 19 years. Green Beret Major Matthew Goldstein and Navy SEAL Chief Edward Gallagher are also accused of killing the enemy in combat. To restore freedom to those who fought for ours, sign my petition at restorefreedom.info. Rally for unfairly accused combat warriors. Restorefreedom.info. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. This message is paid for by the Uniformed Services League.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Don't fear technology. Use it, understand it, and embrace it. The mission of Tech Today is to demystify technology. I'm your host, Chris Bianco, principal of Blue Panther Business Partners. Every Tuesday morning from 10 to 11, we will cover new apps, buying advice, technology news, and answer your questions. Good day, and join me on Tech Today on HunterdonChamberRadio.com.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4-HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
As voters in New Hampshire head to the polls in New Hampshire on this cold and snowy day, it seems to be a two-horse race between Mayor Pete and Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders. As far as what we can expect to learn from the New Hampshire primary, Neil Levesque is the executive director of the New Hampshire Institute of Politics. He tells Fox News,
"It's always easy to go back in history and sort of compare presidential elections, but here's what we do know about the past, is that Bernie Sanders got 60% of the vote here 4 years ago, and so if he can sort of get those same people and create that momentum, and does he have a revolution? That's the big question that we're going to see tonight."
And Democrats are slamming President Trump's annual budget proposal. Talking with reporters at the Capitol, Senate Democratic Leader Chuck Schumer calls it a blueprint for destroying America. Without providing any specifics, Schumer also says it will hurt American workers. This is USA Radio News.
February is Black History Month, and what better way to celebrate than through the sounds of music? Opening summer 2020 in Nashville, the National Museum of African American Music will feature more than 50 musical genres created and inspired by African Americans. Museum President and CEO H. Beecher Hicks III.
We are proud to be a first-of-its-kind museum dedicated to celebrating the role African Americans play in shaping the American soundtrack. When you step inside the museum, you'll be instantly immersed into what I like to call 56,000 square feet of funk. We have seven galleries filled with more than 1,500 artifacts from some of your favorite artists, from gospel and hip-hop to country and classical. you'll be able to trace generations of untold black history within our walls. We are one nation under a groove, uniting all people through a shared history. And we are excited to welcome everyone to Nashville, America's Music City.
For more on the National Museum of African American Music, visit blackmusicmuseum.org.
It was a new ratings low for the Academy Awards on Sunday night. USA Radio Network's Chris Barnes has the details.
Last year, the first hostless Academy Awards in three decades resulted in ratings that did rise year over year for the first time since 2014. So ABC and the Academy decided to go without an MC again this year. But instead of repeating the ratings growth last year, the 2020 telecast fell to the award show's lowest ratings ever. 23.6 million viewers tuning in on Sunday night, a 20% or 6 million viewer drop-off from last year. They do say that Parasite winning Best Picture was the most tweeted about moment during the show, and actor Joaquin Phoenix's acceptance speech for Best Actor was the second most popular moment.
I've been selfish, hard to work with, and ungrateful, but so many of you in this room have given me a second chance.
Fed Chairman Jerome Powell says the Fed Reserve is keeping a close eye on the coronavirus, and you're listening to USA Radio News.
With a recession ending, if you've been putting off building your business, now is the time to act. General Steel will meet or beat any price on a pre-engineered steel building of the same size and specifications. Act now before steel prices go up. So call us today for free information.
Call 800-965-1290. 800-965-1290, 800-965-1290.
In just the first week of this tax season, the IRS says they've processed nearly 13 million returns and issued nearly 4.3 million refunds. CBS News business analyst Jill Schlesinger has some important reminders for this tax season.
Three major issues that are different this year than last year, right after the tax law change. Number one is that you no longer have to pay a penalty if you did not have health insurance. That individual mandate, it went to zero, so it's gone. No tax forms you have to file. If you got divorced last year and there is some alimony payment, alimony is basically now tax neutral, meaning if you pay alimony, you don't get to deduct it, but if you receive alimony, you don't have to claim it. If you were divorced prior to 2019, the old rules apply. And finally, if you are going to be able to deduct medical expenses, you have to be an itemizer, and it has to be more than 7.5% of your adjusted gross income. So those are the big changes for this year.
A plan to lower prescription drug prices is gaining more support in the United States Senate. Iowa Republican Senator Chuck Grassley discusses how much money it'll save.
The bill that we voted out of committee would be saving the taxpayers $100 billion. It would lower Medicare out-of-pocket costs, and it would lower premiums.
Grassley is one of the authors of the Prescription Drug Pricing Reduction Act. For USA Radio News, I'm Tim Berg.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HuntertonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
As voters in New Hampshire head to the polls in New Hampshire on this cold and snowy day, it seems to be a two-horse race between Mayor Pete and Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders. As far as what we can expect to learn from the New Hampshire primary, Neil Levesque is the executive director of the New Hampshire Institute of Politics. He tells Fox News,
"It's always easy to go back in history and sort of compare presidential elections, but here's what we do know about the past, is that Bernie Sanders got 60% of the vote here 4 years ago, and so if he can sort of get those same people and create that momentum, and does he have a revolution? That's the big question that we're going to see tonight."
And Democrats are slamming President Trump's annual budget proposal. Talking with reporters at the Capitol, Senate Democratic leader Chuck Schumer calls it a blueprint for destroying America. Without providing any specifics, Schumer also says it will hurt American workers. This is USA Radio News.
February is Black History Month, and what better way to celebrate than through the sounds of music? Opening summer 2020 in Nashville, the National Museum of African American Music will feature more than 50 musical genres created and inspired by African Americans. Museum President and CEO H. Beecher Hicks III.
We are proud to be a first-of-its-kind museum dedicated to celebrating the role African Americans play in shaping the American soundtrack. When you step inside the museum, you'll be instantly immersed into what I like to call 56,000 square feet of funk. We have seven galleries filled with more than 1,500 artifacts from some of your favorite artists, from gospel and hip-hop to country and classical. You'll be able to trace generations of untold black history within our walls. We are one nation under a groove, uniting all people through a shared history. And we are excited to welcome everyone to Nashville, America's Music City.
For more on the National Museum of African American Music, visit blackmusicmuseum.org.
It was a new ratings low for the Academy Awards on Sunday night. USA Radio Network's Chris Barnes has the details.
Last year, the first hostless Academy Awards in three decades resulted in ratings that did rise year over year for the first time since 2014. So ABC and the Academy decided to go without an MC again this year. But instead of repeating the ratings growth last year, the 2020 telecast fell to the award show's lowest ratings ever. 23.6 million viewers tuning in on Sunday night, a 20% or 6 million viewer drop-off from last year. They do say that Parasite winning Best Picture was the most tweeted about moment during the show, and actor Joaquin Phoenix's acceptance speech for Best Actor was the second most popular moment.
I've been selfish, hard to work with, and ungrateful, but so many of you in this room have given me a second chance.
Fed Chairman Jerome Powell says the Fed Reserve is keeping a close eye on the coronavirus, and you're listening to USA Radio News.
With a recession ending, if you've been putting off building your business, now is the time to act. General Steel will meet or beat any price on a pre-engineered steel building of the same size and specifications. Act now before steel prices go up. So call us today for free information.
Call 800-965-1290. 800-965-1290, 800-965-1290.
In just the first week of this tax season, the IRS says they've processed nearly 13 million returns and issued nearly 4.3 million refunds. CBS News business analyst Jill Schlesinger has some important reminders for this tax season.
Three major issues that are different this year than last year, right after the tax law change. Number one is that you no longer have to pay a penalty if you did not have health insurance. That individual mandate, it went to zero, so it's gone. No tax forms you have to file. If you got divorced last year and there is some alimony payment, alimony is basically now tax neutral, meaning if you pay alimony, you don't get to deduct it, but if you receive alimony, you don't have to claim it. If you were divorced prior to 2019, the old rules apply. And finally, if you are going to be able to deduct medical expenses, you have to be an itemizer, and it has to be more than 7.5% of your adjusted gross income. So those are the big changes for this year.
A plan to lower prescription drug prices is gaining more support in the United States Senate. Iowa Republican Senator Chuck Grassley discusses how much money it'll save.
The bill that we voted out of committee would be saving the taxpayers $100 billion. It would lower Medicare out-of-pocket costs, and it would lower premiums.
Grassley is one of the authors of the Prescription Drug Pricing Reduction Act. For USA Radio News, I'm Tim Berg.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Greetings, warriors, veterans, and America loving citizens from sea to shining sea. Welcome to Front Lines of Freedom. Hoo-wah! I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Thank you for joining us. The Front Lines of Freedom team salutes all fathers on this Father's Day weekend. Joining me at the 50 caliber microphone today is co-host Air Force vet Josh Lang. What's up, Josh?
Well, happy Father's Day to you too, Colonel. Yes, we're both in this dad boat together. But I'm holding my breath a bit this weekend because my oldest is taking his first glider flight, an opportunity provided by his Civil Air Patrol squadron. Me? I only do fixed wing with at least one engine, so I'll be relieved once he's back on terra firma. Blessings to all the fellow dads who are spending time with us this weekend. That's what Father's Day weekend is all about, getting to do that which we enjoy doing, even if it means doing nothing at all.
Thanks, Josh. And Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby is going to join us to share some warrant wisdom. And Marine Vet Skip Coriel is the father of the most kids on the Front Lines of Freedom team. So you're the winner, Skip.
Well, you know, I earned it, Colonel. Are you talking about seven kids?
Yeah.
Seven kids. That's a lot of kids.
And you don't have that much gray hair.
Well, I joke with my wife, Sarah, all the time. I say, you know, someday you're going to wake up in the morning and you're going to look at me and go, oh my gosh, it's an old man. And the truth is, people say, I don't look as old as I am, but I'm aging from the inside out.
Yes, it's nice to look good on the outside, but yes, you live on the inside. Okay, here's what we have for you today. A news and comment by the Colonel. I'm going to suggest that the recognition and honor given to the D-Day soldiers was totally appropriate, but the soldiers of the more recent wars are worthy of that too. Colonel Alan West will discuss the absolutely unacceptable situation our military has been enduring for years, that of combat veterans being charged, tried, convicted, and jailed for murder because they killed the enemy in combat. Then we're going to meet Renee Nichelle and discuss her book about her combat veteran brother. The book is Always My Hero. Next, Nathaniel Philsides will share about his book, In the Hurricane. It's about how our nation won the Revolutionary War. I learned a bit from this book. And my favorite weatherman, Bill Steffen, will join us to discuss his father, a combat veteran.
Hey, troops, please invite your friends to join us at this time on this great radio station. Then head on out to frontlinesoffreedom.com and sign up for our free e-newsletter. And join the conversation at facebook.com/frontlinesoffreedom.
We welcome your input to this show. Send us your ideas and comments through our website, frontlinesoffreedom.com, or do it on Facebook. And now it's time for news and comment by the Colonel. We'll start with the news. Lead out, Josh.
Our Navy has released videos showing the close call the guided missile cruiser Chancellorsville had with a Russian warship in the Philippine Sea. And one appears to show shirtless Russian sailors sunbathing as the tense encounter played out. Navy officials say the Russian warship came within 50 to 100 feet of the Chancellorsville, putting the ship and her crew at risk. The 7th Fleet said in a statement, quote, "This unsafe action forced Chancellorsville to execute all engines back full and to maneuver to avoid collision," end quote. Chief of Naval Operations Admiral John Richardson said in a statement, quote, "The behavior by the captain of the Russian destroyer in the Philippine Sea was irresponsible and reckless. This unwise maneuver and previous actions by the Russians at sea and in the air do not match what the world expects from a responsible and trustworthy world power," end quote. The cruiser was on a steady course and speed while recovering a helicopter when the Russian destroyer maneuvered from behind and to the right, speeding up and coming dangerously close to sideswiping the ship. The close encounter with the Russian ship was the second the Navy had in 3 days with the Russian military. Earlier, a Navy P-8A Poseidon aircraft was flying in international airspace above the Mediterranean when it was intercepted by a Russian Su-35 three times. Navy officials said one of the passes was unsafe.
I don't think either of these incidents was an accident. Russia is doing all it can do to show its muscle. We have to be ready to deal with things like this. Someday someone's going to die during one of these reckless maneuvers.
Brigadier General Laura Yeager, who early in her career served as a UH-60 Black Hawk helicopter aeromedical evacuation pilot, will become the first woman in history to lead a U.S. Army infantry division. Yeager is scheduled to assume command of the California National Guard's storied 40th Infantry Division during a ceremony at the Joint Forces Training Base in Los Alamitos on June 29th. Yeager currently commands the Joint Task Force North, U.S. Northern Command, at Fort Bliss, Texas. She began her active duty military service in May 1986, receiving her commission as a second lieutenant from the ROTC at California State University, Long Beach. She completed military helicopter training in 1989, and upon completion served as a pilot. Yeager left active duty after 8 years when her son was born, but later continued her military career in the California Army National Guard. In 2011, Yeager deployed to Iraq as the deputy commander of the California Guard's 40th Combat Aviation Brigade. There, she served as battalion commander of the 3rd Battalion 140th Aviation Regiment and brigade commander of the 40th Combat Aviation Brigade.
General Yeager had an interesting career, but as an infantryman, I'm not sure that someone who has never been in the infantry or the armor and whose combat experience is leading an aviation battalion and brigade is the right person to command an infantry division.
The top commander of U.S. forces in the Middle East says he believes the Iranians or their proxies may orchestrate an attack at any moment. Marine General Frank McKenzie said in an exclusive broadcast interview with NBC News in the Iraqi capital, quote, "I think the threat is imminent," end quote. He stated, "We continually evaluate our force posture in the region." The U.S. has beefed up its military presence in the region in an effort to deter Iran and protect American forces and allies. Over the last month, the Trump administration announced that it was sending an aircraft carrier strike group and Air Force bombers to the Middle East, as well as Patriot missiles and additional troops, amid heightened concerns of an Iranian attack. General McKenzie stressed that tensions remain high, saying, quote, "I don't actually believe the threat has diminished. I believe the threat is still very real," end quote. McKenzie made the statements after holding a series of meetings with the Iraqi prime minister and defense chief. McKenzie said he was heartened by the efforts of the Iraqi government to protect American forces and its allies in the region. General McKenzie noted that, to date, roadside bombs have posed the biggest danger to American forces in Iraq. But he added that the threat from the Iranians is evolving. He said, quote, "They probe for weaknesses all the time. I would say the threat has probably evolved in certain ways, even as our defensive posture has changed and become more aggressive. And we certainly thank our Iraqi partners for many of the things they've done. I think we're still in the period of what I would call tactical warning. The threat is very real," end quote. McKenzie declined to go into specifics on the nature of the threats.
Recently, at least 4 oil tankers in the Persian Gulf have been attacked, and there are reports that Iran has told its proxy terrorist groups to be prepared to attack Americans. Another factor is that U.S. sanctions are really, really hurting Iran financially. They may not be able to finance the attacks that they seek. We'll see.
The Department of Veterans Affairs charged nearly 73,000 veterans improper home loan funding fees, totaling up to $286 million, an error that could result in refunds for the affected veterans. The VA Inspector General released a report saying that from January 2012 through December of 2017, the VA improperly charged disabled veterans loan funding fees that they are not required to pay because of their disability status. About 53,200 veterans may be owed a total of $189 million, while an additional 34,400 veterans could receive refunds adding up to $164 million. If the Veterans Benefits Administration doesn't fix the problem that resulted in erroneous funding fee charges, the report found.
It's been very clear that the VA was, at least at the highest levels, corrupt for years. That has changed at the highest levels, but it takes a while to change the culture. And that's the news. This is Colonel Denny Gillum. Coming up on Front Lines of Freedom, I'll share comments by the Colonel, and we'll enjoy some warrant wisdom. Then we'll talk with Colonel Alan West. At East Troops, take a break. Spartan Nash is committed to supporting our veterans as they transition out of the service and back into the workforce. As a veteran-friendly and military-friendly employer, Spartan Nash is committed to hiring, training, and retaining those who served our country.
Learn how your skills and experience can be put to use at Spartan Nash and begin your civilian career with us. Learn more at careers.spartannash.com.
This is Marine Vet Skip Correa with your Home Defense Tip of the Week. According to the U.S. Department of Justice, your front door is the number one preferred entry point for home invaders. On average, it takes 5 seconds to break down your solid steel security door. To prevent this, reinforce your door frame by doubling the 2x4s and by using longer, case-hardened screws to attach the hinges to the door frame. This is just one more way to keep your family safe. For more useful tips on home and personal defense, visit homedefenseshow.com.
So you sit down and do your budget, and you look at all your monthly costs and your bills and your income, and it seems like there's never quite enough. You know what would really help? Finding $500 a month to help balance things out. That is the typical savings. $500 a month for a family when you switch to MediShare for your health care. And when it comes to healthcare sharing ministries, MediShare is really the gold standard. It's been around for 25 years and has more than 400,000 members. It's been around so long and grown so much because it works. And whether you're single or married or have kids, this could make sitting down to do a monthly budget a lot more fun. $500 a month can more than cover a car payment or payback loans, whatever. So join MediShare and go out to dinner to celebrate. Here's the number to call. They are incredibly kind and helpful to talk to. 855-90-BIBLE. That's 855-90-BIBLE. 855-90-BIBLE.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm chairman of the Ambassadors Committee of the Chamber. As members of the Ambassadors Committee, we contact new and renewing members of the Chamber to get their feedback on their Chamber experience and make them feel more at home with the Chamber.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Advancing Hunterdon is an ever-sharp focus on the growth and prosperity of Hunterdon County's businesses. Advancing Hunterdon engages businesses within and throughout the county that are responsive to a call to action as the next chapter in business success. If your business and organization wants to get engaged, contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. Advancing Hunterdon, a roadmap for economic growth for the business community of Hunterdon.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
As votes are continuing to be cast in the New Hampshire primary, former Vice President Joe Biden is nowhere to be found in the state. Instead, he's on his way to South Carolina. Jerry King is an undecided voter. She reacts to the news of Biden leaving the state.
I hope he explains the reason that he did it. I can't even begin to guess why that is. I'm sure people on his campaign are disappointed that he won't be here, but I think
he's going to get votes in other states. That's what the statement is.
And apparently that was his choice. That was a surprise. Mm-hmm. He has been in New Hampshire a lot. I've seen him several times here.
King speaking there on Fox News. Democrats are slamming President Trump's annual budget proposal, including House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, who says one word describes a president's budget.
This is a heartless budget.
And you're listening to USA Radio News.
Money, 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 money. You gotta have it. When you need it, what do? If you don't have a rich uncle, call LendingTree. With us, hundreds of banks compete for your business, so you'll get loans with competitive interest rates, and in some cases, with no closing costs. So here's the deal. If you need money, call us. Do you want to refinance your current loan? Are you 62 or older and interested in a reverse mortgage? Then call LendingTree now, 800-634-1315, 800-634-1315. We've closed over $250 billion in loans. We know what we're doing and can help you. Call right now for a free quote, 800-634-1315, 800-634-1315, 800-634-1315. That's 800-634-1315. NMLS number 1136.
Troops, welcome back to the nation's largest military veteran talk radio show, Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Troops, please do send me your comments and questions. Contact me through frontlinesoffreedom.com. It's an honor to welcome back to the show retired Army Lieutenant Colonel Alan West. Alan and I both volunteer with groups seeking to right a horrible wrong. Can you imagine combat troops being charged with murder for killing the enemy in combat? That's been happening for some 10 years now, and many of these men have served long prison sentences, and some are out on parole as convicted murderers. Alan, thank you for joining us today. I appreciate having you back on, brother.
It's good to be with you, Colonel Gillum. It's always a pleasure.
As I recollect, and we discussed this briefly, when you were a battalion commander, you got bumped by the goofy rules of engagement. It didn't damage you, but you ran up against it personally, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. I mean, I was a battalion commander. We had some information on a suspected Iraqi police officer who was sharing information with Saddam Fedayeen forces operating in the area as far as our patrol routes and things of this nature. We ascertained who it was. He was detained, brought in. He was stonewalling and not providing information. You know, at the time, I had detailed to me two female interrogators, one the actual interrogator, the other the interpreter. And if you know anything about Middle Eastern culture, that's not a good tool.
Yes.
And so, you know, I took it upon myself to go and use a psychological intimidation tactic and told the guy that if he did not tell us what we needed to know, we'd just take him out behind the building and shoot him and kill him. Never intended, but just trying to see if we could get him to think about providing us the information. He didn't. He stonewalled. I took him outside, fired one round from my service 9mm Beretta into the air, and then fired a second one over his head into a weapons clearing barrel. And he shared some things through the translator, and I went and let my boss know, my brigade commander, know exactly what I had done. I told him everything and the information we had gotten from him, and that was it. And about a month or so later, the assistant division commander came down and wanted to talk to me and ask me questions, and I was very forthright. I had nothing to hide, and I took responsibility for what I had done. And they wanted to try to court-martial me, which would have been 8 years in prison, but it ended up just being non-judicial punishment, a $5,000 fine.
Well, as I mentioned, when I was a company commander in Vietnam, I had a guy who, same kind of situation, didn't want to talk. I walked up and put a bullet from my .45 caliber pistol in the ground next to his foot, and suddenly he started talking. And in both cases, what we were doing was trying to protect our soldiers, which is what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to bring them back safe if we can. And somebody who's clearly not working with the enemy, who we did not physically abuse, I think that's what we're supposed to do. But that's an example of the weird rules of engagement that we at least used to have. And that's a lot of soldiers got hurt by that, didn't they?
Yes, they did. And as a matter of fact, I was just recently talking to someone about that over the weekend, about how, you know, this whole thing about IEDs. And it is unconscionable to me that we know that people are going to come out at night on the routes that we take, and there are routes that they know that we take, and they are in place in these IEDs. Well, why is it that they're able to do this in the middle of the night? We should have all kind of drones and surveillance, helicopters up. And if someone's on the side of the road, you know, planting something that does not look like corn, they should be immediately eliminated and taken out. But when you have these rules on the battlefield that are dictated by, you know, a lot of these lawyers who have, you know, subsumed so much power, that says unless someone shows you immediate hostile intent, you cannot engage them. Well, you know, that's how the enemy finds the gaps by which they can exploit us. And so many of these IEDs get laid out there, and it causes death and wounds to our troops.
And that's something that we as leaders and our leaders are supposed to avoid. Somehow we've got this idea that in war, no civilians are ever supposed to get hit. Well, I'll go along with that as a goal. But according to the rules of war, combatants have to dress like combatants. And when the enemy that you fought and the enemy that some of the enemy I fought and the enemies our troops are fighting today, they're, by that standard, they're all war criminals because they don't dress different. Mm-hmm. So don't be counting the number of civilians who got in the way when some of those guys are hiding behind their wives and children while they're shooting at Americans.
You're absolutely
that's
right.
That's ridiculous.
And that's the thing that we fail to understand at the strategic level. These are non-state, non-uniform belligerents on the battlefield, and the Geneva Convention is very specific about, you know, they don't have rights the same as a soldier that fights for a declared nation. And I think that we go overboard. I understand being humane, but when we're talking about engaging this enemy that's trying to blend in with civilian populace, they're the ones that are causing the civilian casualties more than anything else. And furthermore, when you look at how we are punishing our young men in these combat situations, to charge them with premeditated murder in a combat zone, you might as well be writing speeding tickets at the Daytona 500.
I like that parallel. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Front Lines of Freedom. We're talking rules of engagement with Colonel Alan West. Alan, I took a look the other day at the lists of soldiers, mostly Army soldiers, a good number of Navy SEALs, and a few Marines on the list that I saw, which I don't pretend to be comprehensive. It's hard for me as a soldier to encourage people to